So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And I tell you, as usual, we always have a good show for you. Yes, we do. That's why you come here, right? That's why thousands of you guys follow us, because you want to hear the latest dirt. You want to hear the latest dish. And you want to see just how crazy or stupid we can get or where we're going to go. Well, welcome to it. Last night, we talked a little bit about a death in Valley Station. Guy by the name, street name, Massimo Carlucci. He also goes by the name of Gotti. His real name is Joshua Coles. The media finally put out his real name earlier today. You know, guys, this is going to be a crazy situation. There is a lot of things coming out about this white supremacist. You can look his name up and Google it all you want to, Joshua Coles, C-O-W-L-E-S. This guy was bad news, has always been bad news. He's one of the drugs and thugs and slugs people out here in the Southwest that the police and everybody else have known about for a long, long time. Unfortunately, what we run into now is we want to know why Mr. Coles has been able to operate basically out in the open and do anything he wants to do. There's already rumors of cover-up with the investigation going on. And I tell you, I kind of wonder what the real deal is here, and I tell you why. Because Joshua Coles, Gotti, a.k.a. Massimo Carlucci, whatever the hell name you wanted to use yesterday or the day before, this guy is, like I said, into white supremacy. But when you're running prostitution, you've got 100 people coming in and out of your house at all the time and everything else. It's an automatic red flag to any cop worth their salt that something's going on. But when you've actually been called and told about this guy and it still was ignored, then you know that there's a bigger problem. Well, yesterday, for me, and I want somebody to call me and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm looking at all the available public information on this particular situation yesterday, and I'm also talking to a couple of insider sources, that's a situation to be handled later. But miraculously, Coles was apparently shot dead at 6 o'clock yesterday morning, and his body wasn't removed until 4:30 yesterday afternoon. What I'm being told, interestingly enough, is that the police actually called in and waited for a search warrant to go into this house. Now, what makes that incredible is you've got some shots fired from inside the house. Police are called. There's a guy dead in there. They know when they get there from the shots fired. When have the police ever waited for a search warrant to walk into an ongoing criminal scene and not using something called probable cause? So there was something really alarming about the fact that they had to get a search warrant first. The second thing is, after they moved Cole's body at 4:30 yesterday afternoon, not long after, within an hour to an hour and a half, the crime scene tape was gone and everybody was allowed to go back in. And oh, by the way, while the police were there, one of my insiders is telling me that when they went through the house, they found guns and ammunition, just left them there, and only confiscated some computers, electronic equipment, and two safes. Now, if you're in a crime scene that involves a shooting, one, I've never seen a crime scene in Louisville that involved a murder investigation shut down in a matter of hours. You secure the scene for a couple of days to make sure you do everything you need to do. The second thing I've never seen is that you actually wait for a search warrant to search a house like that, especially when you walk in and the house has swastikas all over the wall. There's a dead body covered in blood. And then finally, an investigation on a murder scene that would leave weapons in a home. There's a lot of things here that don't add up. Gotti was known to brag about having LMPD officers on his payroll. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But something about this investigation does stink, and it needs to be looked into in a very serious way immediately. And maybe we need the feds to come in here, because this is clearly gang-related. There's talk of Gotti being involved in human trafficking. That would take care of the FBI, not the LMPD. And maybe that's what we need here, because this should lead to something bigger. Because as I told everybody last night, Greg Fisher, your mayor, and Councilman David Yates were known to cohort with Joshua Coles. They were working on a deal that I will not explain in detail right now, but it is a fact that they had been together working on a deal for Fisher and Yates. What they had to do with a scumbag like that, you guys make up your own mind. But there's something going on, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. In the meantime, Dale the Truth, I apologize. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. Did I miss the music tonight, Ed, or what?
Yeah, you missed the music, man. You missed the music.
Wow, it must have been short-lived music tonight. You got to go back to like the extended version of Freebird or something. That was short.
Well, actually, I've been using original music for over a week now. Cool. We're going to original music, and we shortened the intro. I don't want to make our listeners wait, 3 minutes at show start just listen to dead music. So we're going to go ahead. We went to some original music. Our intros are going to be limited to about a minute and a half when possible. And, more content, man. We keep running to the
I heard half of your intro. I just heard enough to hear that there's I don't know that much about this story. You're the expert on the story. I wish that the police would use that kind of restraint when they're busting into people's houses for marijuana cigarettes or prescription drugs or something. I mean, that would be nice. But when you say that there might be police on some kind of gangster's payrolls, I'm shocked that there's corruption in the police department. That's terrible to believe, because, I'm anti-cop. If you ask the bootlegged former cops out there, I'm shocked to hear there's corruption in the police department, Ed.
Well, I know you're saying that in jest, but I tell you, there
is
corruption.
Police never do anything wrong. I've never been a police, so I don't know how hard it is for them. I wouldn't be able to comment on their job. That's what I've been told.
Well, we do know that there are police on the take right here in Louisville. There's just too many people to talk about different officers like that. We've got a couple of names that we're investigating actively right now because we don't trust the LMPD Internal Affairs Division to do their own investigation. So we're going to do our own investigation. And, I'll let everybody know how the details work out on that. But it just gets to be pretty incredible that we continue going down this road. But in the case of Coles, I'm really hoping that now, finally, the feds have a reason to come in here, because this investigation, you don't wrap up a murder scene investigation in 12 or 13 hours. No. It doesn't get done. If somebody gets killed on a roadway, for God's sake, they've got the road shut down for almost a day, it seems like. You don't have that. And you don't leave weapons in a home where a shooting was involved. It just defies logic, especially when all the signs are that this is a white supremacist. You've got swastikas all over the house, white supremacist literature everywhere. But you go in and you get computer files. And I tell you why they wanted the computer files. It is known within Gotti's circle that he keeps all of his hookers. He calls them escorts online, of course. But he keeps all of his hookers and everything else on his computer. What they're worried about is he might actually have a log. I'll tell you that right now. They're worried he might actually have a log. It may have a client list. Gotti has been, rumored to be involved in human trafficking. Where's the list for that? And with the Greg Fisher and David Yates situation with Gotti, there's a lot of people scared right now. So maybe they just wanted to get their butts out of there, get all the electronic information they can, get the hard drives and everything else. I don't know. I know Gotti was known to leave a laptop in his trunk of his car where he presumably kept his most important stuff, thinking that nobody would find it if they ever raided his house. Well, from what I understand, the police took all the keys to the cars that were at the house yesterday and went through all the cars as well. So this is going to be really interesting to see how this investigation goes forward. LMP is not going to play because I'm talking about
it. I'll say this real quick. I mean, the one thing that – I mean, not that there's anything wrong with you saying it, but I don't think there's any crime yet. We haven't made it a crime yet for him to have – his own belief system, his own political belief system. If it's white supremacy, I don't know anything about this guy, but You know, hell, I'm glad they didn't find a "Don't Tread on Me" flag. They would have burned the house down.
You know, that's a good point. But you know, I mean, he's got a First Amendment right to that stuff. I don't like it. I think it's disgusting. But he's got a First Amendment right to that, and I have no problem with him taking care of his First Amendment rights. But in today's day and age, you know, that's a clear sign that there's some kind of hate going on. We know that police always look for that. I mean, Jesus Christ, they searched my son's car and arrested me because mm-hmm. they made up a false claim of probable cause. Here you've got a guy dead in the middle of a floor with fresh blood leaking out of him, swastikas all over the house, weapons in the house, and you just walk away with some computer equipment in a safe? Come on, man. That defies logic. And, you know, and this is all done in 12 hours or less. So it is a major situation. This is going to break and explode. Greg Fisher and David Yates, no, I'm not saying these guys killed Gotti. He was beating up one of his exes who happened to be a hooker, and he was mad because she wouldn't turn tricks on him. So he was beating her up, and she got pissed and shot. Okay, I'm not blaming Fisher and Yates for murder in this situation. But they were working on a scummy deal with this guy, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to get to the bottom of it. This is ridiculous. We're not going to have this in Louisville, and I don't care what they do to me anymore. I really don't. I kept my mouth shut about that for months, that I've decided – after this situation, it's time to go forward and get something serious done here in Louisville. So, you know, if I disappear, folks, you'll know why. But we're going down that road. We're going to take them out, and we're going to hold them accountable. And for the LMPD officers that are on the take that are involved in this, that have been protecting Gotti, there's at least two of your names that are coming to the surface. We're going to identify you, and we're going to take you out, too. I can do that, you see, because I'm a free citizen in this country, and I've got no problem doing what I think is right on behalf of my fellow citizens. But that ain't why people come here. They don't want to hear about all of that. They want to talk about politics and issues. So there's your news of the day. But there's a great little pre-filed bill in the 2014 General Assembly. And before you freak out, Dale, we're going to get to the 32nd. I know you're chomping at the bit. but there was a great bill pre-filed by a guy I wouldn't have expected it from. Representative Tom Burch pre-filed a bill that's going to require the local governments to clearly define their discretionary funds and things like that before they can allocate money. Essentially, since we've had...
What's Burch about, 112 years old now?
Give or take, yeah.
It seems like he's been in there since the Civil War.
Well, this is a guy that I really not care for much, for the most part. I really haven't. This guy seems to be a nanny state guy in so many ways through the years. I just don't like Tom Burch, never had. But in this particular situation, this is one of those times where you sometimes they get something right. He's trying to prohibit council members from using discretionary funds to pay for their day-to-day operating expenses like offices and staffing, which they do. They supplement their LAs, for example. They supplement their legislative assistant salaries by taking money out of their discretionary funds. That's not what those things are set up for. You know, they're allowed to transfer $25,000 from their NDF neighborhood development funds to their discretionary funds just for that purpose, and that's wrong. So he's trying to get control of the spending by Metro Council. Coming on the heels of the Judy Greene verdict and Barbara Shanklin getting caught and all of the other stuff that hasn't been caught yet, this is a good thing, don't you think, to force the Metro Council members in accountability for their spending?
Well, it makes me wonder what the old dinosaur in the legislators' modus operandi is here. Why does he want this? Because I guess the only problem I have with it is he wouldn't like it if somebody was trying to cop down on his rights to have discretionary spending. But yeah, if you know, for whatever reason, by any means necessary, I guess it's. It needs to be having the light of day shed on it because we need it to be transparent so we can see what's going on.
Well, I totally agree. I totally agree. So now we're actually going down that road of transparency. We're actually going to get the state involved, and they have to be involved because KRS 67C dictates merger and everything else, all the stuff we kind of do, and these guys make their own rules. So we have to have a way to get them under control. They're certainly not going to do it themselves. So I, for one, am glad to see that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and get in 30-second early, Dale, and hope we get some time because I want to blast John Yarmus' butt in a little bit. But
poor John Yarmus. He's just trying to help you out.
Yeah, well, whatever. But he's a clown. But as we know, we mentioned it last night, Phil Moffitt, formerly gubernatorial
candidate. I didn't get to hear last night. Did you talk about it? Oh, right.
Yeah. Like you didn't hear. Since I mentioned you twice on air, yeah, you know better. But
no, I didn't hear the show.
Was that Monday night you were listening in then?
Yeah, it was Monday night.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got my days confused. But
yeah.
Anyway, long story short, we know Phil Moffitt ran for governor against David Williams. David Williams got 48% in the Republican primary for governor. Phil got 38%, and Bobby Coleslaw picked up the difference. You know, it's interesting here because everybody expected – do what?
The coleslaw's gotten stale after it gets old.
Yeah. Well, now she's running for county clerk again, and I'm assuming she's going to pull that off, yeah. But, you know, the bottom line is Phil made himself a great name, did a good job running for governor. A lot of people assumed he would run for governor again in this round, but he's decided not to. For the Republican primary in the 32nd State House District, former JCRP chairwoman Shelley May announced a month ago that she was going to run to replace that seat because Julie Rocky Adams has given it up to run for district Metro Council for District 19 so she can pad her retirement. That's all that's about. You know, it's not like she cares about the people. Well, she just wants more money when she retires. But Shelley May made that announcement a month ago. Now we have a Republican primary because Phil Moffitt has decided to opt out of the governor's race and decided to step in to the 32nd District State House race with a primary against Shelley May. Is that a good move, bad move? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Man, you set the softball up for me. I think it's going to be Christmas in May, or you know, my birthday's in May, so maybe it'll be an early birthday present. I mean,
Let me rephrase it before we go down the road I know you're going to go. When I ask if it's a good move or a bad move, I'm talking about Phil's political future, because that's almost taking a step backwards when you look at the political climate.
No, I didn't hear that part. You're kind of staticky tonight. I mean, I don't think it's a bad move. I think he wants to take it on a more localized race because he already ran a statewide race, and that's hard to run a race that lasts like 5 hours and two time zones and hills and plains and everything else. The governor's race in Kentucky is one of the tougher governor's races to run because of how wide out the state is. 32nd District, these people know him. I mean, these people know him in this district. He just to let people know, that's the district I used to live in. It's a darn shame that I guess I had to leave that district before I could vote in that race. But he ran in the primary, like you said, for governor, and he had him and Blackjack and Coleslaw. And as you know, Coleslaw split the vote in Louisville and pretty much kept Moffitt from winning that primary. And as you also know, she won a lot of precincts in Louisville. And that 32nd LD, I can tell you I did the numbers on it today, in that race – Coleslaw beat Moffitt by 16 votes, and they both crushed Williams. Williams came in a distant third. That tells you what they think about the elite in my part of town. So, you know, if Coleslaw got 863 votes, which she did, and Moffitt got 847, and Blackjack Williams got 731, you know, you tell me, I think it's a good move for him to run for state rep if that's the numbers he got for governor in this district.
Well, I'm not saying that. For me, the only thing I'm looking at from that aspect of it, and, you know, from that aspect of it, the only thing for me is...
I wanted to run for governor, too. I mean, if that's the caveat, but we need good candidates. And if he decided that a governor's race wasn't in the cards for him, I'm glad to see him out there running.
Okay. That's what I was kind of wanting to know. Is it a good move, bad move? Because I think Phil is electable in any race that he wants to run in. That's not an issue for me. I think he's electable. I do think that the 32nd is not going to be as clear-cut black and white as you're making it out to be.
It's going to be easy. I think it's going to be a clear-cut race between the elite and the Tea Party.
Well, that's what we're going to see. That's what I'm getting at because, you know, we talk about the establishment versus the non-establishment. We've got Shelley May, who clearly is the establishment candidate. Nobody can deny that. You know, then we've got Phil Moffitt, the Tea Party anti-establishment candidate, in this particular primary. For me, this is going to be the primary to watch. You know, I'm not, you know, that one and the Mitch McConnell primary we're supposed to be watching. And, you know, after everything that's been done to Matt Bevin, I'm actually coming to his side, not because I believe in everything he's doing, but I believe he's getting screwed by the party. And that is not fair. There's not fair access. You what?
It's good to see you coming around, Ed.
It's only because of the fair access. The one thing that we started on this show many, many years ago when we first started this was making sure that we had a fair, equal opportunity for all candidates to be heard. And when a party is working against a candidate in a primary, they are violating all tenets of what the election process is supposed to be about for the party. So I sympathize with Matt Bevin in that regard. But, you know, when we look at this big picture, though, the Moffitt-Shelley May situation is going to be interesting because, as we know, the JCRP, and now you're getting ready to go down the road, baby, and I'm going to let you do it. But the JCRP...
I mean, you're setting up the softballs for me tonight. It's like softball season.
Well, I wanted to know what we really thought about Moffitt stepping down to this race from the governor's race.
I think it's great for him to run. I mean, he made it clear he didn't want to run for governor. I mean, if he wanted to run, he would run for governor, and I think he sees there's some more young blood, and I'm not picking on him for his age because he's not like a Tom Burch, but he sees there's some younger guys who are Tea Party oriented or at least more independently minded. If we saw what the comments from Jamie Comer this week, where he basically cast a shot across the bow and said he wasn't going to be controlled by the party establishment. So I think Moffitt sees people like Jamie Comer who could run for governor, and he thinks, hey, that's going to be an okay race. And you know what? No one's stopping Phil from running for governor. I don't see him as being right. One of those candidates who wants to be perennial and run for office after office, but he could still run for governor if he wanted to as well.
Well, that's true. I think he knows that when he put his hat in this ring, though, in such a short amount of time, he'd have no shot at a governor's race. And in the big picture, I think that's ultimately the thing. I think that Phil realizes you're going to have Jamie Comer in there. Jamie Comer is going to be a tough opponent in a Republican primary. For me personally, when it comes to the governor's race, looking that far ahead, Jamie Comer, Phil Moffitt, and Hal Heiner, believe it or not, those are the three that I really would love to see as a Republican candidate for governor, one of those three. But in the big picture, when you get past the primary and get to the general election, Jamie Comer would clearly have an advantage over Phil Moffitt and Hal Heiner. It's just tough to get a Louisville person elected as a governor. You're just not – happening.
No, you're right. So, make no bones about it. If you want to see Hal Heiner in that race, don't you worry, because the establishment party that you were just about to go down that road, the DCRP, they will do their damnedest to get Hal Heiner in that race.
Oh, I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would. And Hal's a credible opponent. I mean, Hal's a great guy. Like I said, Hal, Phil, or Jamie, to me, would be a credible opponent on the Republican side for the governor's race. Insert any of those three you want to, because all three will be better than anything that the Democrats have to offer. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But going down the road, we look at the Shelley May, the Phil Moffitt. We know that the JCRP has been loaded with problems. We know that they're making what I consider to be illegal phone calls right now, based on party doctrine. Somebody had to be brain dead one night or high, because they actually called you. That was the first one I knew about.
Yeah, they called me and I said to the girl, I just, she already blew her deck and let me know that she was calling for the party for Mr. Connell. I said, you really don't know who you're calling, do you? And that's when I quickly ended the call and saved her some time.
Well, that's the thing, because a month and a half, 2 months ago, I talked to Nathan Haney, the new JCRP chair, and I was very honest with him, because we know that there is a power problem in the JCRP. Shelley May ran into it. Jerry Miller actually ran into it. A lot of people ran into that. It's the McConnell elite, like your John McCarthy's and those guys who have the ties to Mitch McConnell, and they do everything and anything they can, whether it's legal, illegal, good, bad, or indifferent, regardless of what the party chair and the party leadership of the JCRP says to do. That was a constant problem for Shelley May. You know, a lot of people blame Shelley May for what's going on in the party, but, you know, she couldn't control those people. Now, apparently, Nathan Haney can't control those people either. The JCRP is basically imploding at this point, so we know that we're going to have a problem with the entrenched, aren't we? So how is this going to what kind of a race is this going to be with Phil and Shelley, I guess, because this is going to be an interesting diagram.
Well, it's going to be hard to handicap yet, because remember, they have, I've been telling people this for months as a precaution to get involved, anybody out there, they being the public at large, have until the end of January to run. So the biggest if factor, or the biggest wild card, if you will, is if we get a Bobby Coleslaw kind of candidate in there to kind of break it up between the two of them. I hope we don't. I know that sounds maybe contrary to what I usually say, because I usually say the more candidates, the merrier. But this is a small area. I mean, the 32nd District, it's right, and I say out here, I don't live there anymore, but it's that little area there between J-Town and Hurstbourne and Hurstbourne Acres and going down between 64 and 71. It's not a big area, but there's a lot of big money out there. So I was going to ask you to handicap it, because, like I said, Phil Moffitt barely lost Coleslaw when they were running a gubernatorial primary there. So make what you will of that, the fact that Coleslaw got 863 votes in the 32nd, Moffitt got 847, and Black Jack Williams got 731. But then also parlay with that the fact that about 25 to 30% of that district overlies with the council district where Marilyn Parker just ousted establishment John Ackerson.
Right. And, you know, and I think that that's a very crucial point to make, because in all honesty, at this point, you know, well, if you go back to the governor's race, Bobby Coleslaw was installed in that race by David Williams, all right, and the insider gang. There's no doubt in my mind about it. They were worried about Phil Moffitt being able to be competitive, so they installed a third party. Bobby Coleslaw knew, and everybody's probably saying, why does he keep calling her Coleslaw? Her name is Holesclaw. No, she's a cabbage head to us, so we always refer to her as Coleslaw. And you
well, she got on the radio. I mean, I guess I would I would take exception with it, except for she got on the radio, and this is back when Mandy Connell was still in town, and I was actually chatting behind the scenes with Mandy Connell the same day that Holesclaw was on the radio, and Holesclaw on the air tried to say, since we're talking about Phil Moffitt, Holesclaw on the air tried to say that because Phil Moffitt might be in favor of hemp, that made him pro-marijuana, and she basically said on the radio that they were the same thing. So that tells you her credibility was shot.
Yeah, well, she's a cabbage head, man. You know, so she's either smoked one too many of them and forgot about it or something. I don't know. But the reality is, and we all know it, Bobby Coleslaw had no choice, no chance, anything in that race. She was put in that race as a vote splitter because the entrenched were worried about Phil Moffitt. I think that that's a given. Now, when we look at that, you just pointed out another obvious thing here with Maryland Parker. Maryland Parker is clearly Tea Party, clearly libertarian values, and she took out John Ackerson, which thank God she did, because him and his son Brent are pieces of garbage, both of them are. Brent's going to be on a hot seat in the near future, I promise you, folks. Little birdie told me so. But when we look at this, we know that that area has no problem going anti-establishment.
Oh, no.
So now we've got Shelley May, the establishment, who's used to being able to get to that money, you know, because there is a lot of money out there, like you're talking about. So I think it's really going to come down to who can raise the most money, because I think, Phil, I think this is going to be probably one of the most competitive state races we've seen in a while in a primary. I really do. But there's that outside chance. See, here's the thing. If they're worried about Moffitt, if the establishment is worried about Moffitt being competitive, do they put that third person in that primary to split the vote and hope that Shelley comes out ahead? I don't know. I think Shelley's got as good a chance as anybody. I think Phil's got as good a chance as anybody. But if you throw that third person in there, it really throws a monkey in the works.
If you leave it a two-person race, I mean, I have to ask you, Ed, because you might be a little closer to the party in question here than obviously I'm allowed to get. But what is the reason for her to be in this race? Do you think this is, again, just the establishment pushing her out there?
No. In all honesty, I mean, I know you don't care for Shelley May. I've got a great deal of respect and care for Shelley May a great deal.
I just don't care whether she helped cheat and lie and steal to keep Liberty folks out of the party. I mean, and that I told myself I wasn't going to talk about her on the shows anymore, and then she goes and files for the district I used to live in. So.
Well, I think a lot of that was outside of her control, as I keep saying. But I want to make this very clear here. I've got a lot of respect and I think highly of Phil Moffitt, too. This is one of those tough situations because it's one of those rare things where we've actually got two candidates that I think either one would be great for that seat, and I also think that both of them are there for the right reasons. I don't think Shelley May was put up to run for this seat to be an establishment candidate and to fall into line. Shelley May, really, believe it or not, Shelley May does everything from her heart and what she believes in. If she's not going to put her name out there for this if she didn't believe that she was going to do a good job and really work for that district. So I don't see that. I don't see Shelley being put up there just to be a face. I think I see her going there with the intent to win because she believes in it.
Well, the bottom line, and I'm honestly trying to get people an objective look at this race, you have Phil Moffitt, where we know where he lies. We know how he's constitutional. We know he's a maverick, if you will, to use that term when it meant something before Dinosaur McCain stole it. We know Moffitt is a maverick in that he does not do what the party tells him to do. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it's pretty cut and dry. You have somebody who's now wanting Republicans to vote for her in a primary, who did all she could to keep Liberty Republicans from being involved in the party. So that's not me making that up. You can ask hundreds of my friends who are still on my mailing list and phone list, and I have them here, and they won't go anywhere unless the party sends one of their JCPD people out here to break down my door and get my list. But the bottom line is you have a person who did their damnedest to keep Liberty people out of the party, and 18 months later, she wants your votes. Screw that.
Oh, I think a lot of that was outside of her control. You know, and in a chat room, a good friend, Paul, over Stop It, is pointing out the obvious, too. I mean, let's look at – and how these vote splits really go. Let's look at the Virginia governor's race, for example.
Yeah.
You know, now you've got this race is over. You know, with Ken Cuccinelli have won that governor's race, if the Democrats wouldn't have recruited somebody to come in and split the vote. And that's exactly what they did. Now you've got Terry McAuliffe. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was a constitutional Republican. He actually had Dr. Ron Paul campaigning for him. And Ron Paul is getting up there in age. He doesn't just go around and campaign for everybody. So, yeah, now you have party hack McAuliffe in there. We already know it came out through the grassroots and through some of the liberty movement that the libertarian candidate, I hate this because it looks bad for good libertarians like our friend Ken Mollman, but we now know the libertarian candidate was an Obama bundler, and, you know, that's why he was in that race, like you just said, to split the vote.
Well, you know, and that's it. And when we look at Terry McAuliffe, I mean, Terry McAuliffe is a crook, in my opinion. You know, he's always been a crook, always going to be a crook. This guy's got more daggone things on him than the Clintons got sticking to him. And he gets out there and gets this election. So this was really, really an interesting election in Virginia. But it just goes to show you the power of that third-party vote. You know, it's going to be interesting going forward. We're going to take a break, folks. We're going to come back. We're probably going to continue a little bit along this line. We're going to get into some we got to get into the ACA Obamacare, man. This John Yarmy thing is just eating me alive. So get ready for it. For you guys that want to call in, 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. You can, for you guys who are in the listening queue, you can always hit that number 1 on your dial pad, and we'll get you live on air in just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springsteen Show here on the MBM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Seconds of dead air there. That was an Ed Springsteen mistake. I switched everything around and went to this new original music and all this other stuff and trying to get all professional on you guys. And quite frankly, what I didn't do yet is make one continuous break stream, and that's what I need to work on. When a commercial ran out, I didn't hit the button in time, so blame me, okay? It's not a technical issue. It's an Ed Springsteen issue, so take it for what it's worth. You know, we've got all these races going on, Dale, and we're getting it. You know, we talked about the Phil Moffitt and the 32nd State House race with Shelley May, you know, but we've really got to get into the Mitch McConnell Senate race. And, you know, with Matt Bevin being shut out of being able to use any of the JCRP resources, which they're not allowed to let Mitch McConnell people use either, which is totally mind-boggling to me. They're not including him on event mailing list. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't know a good analogy to use. That's like if somebody owned 300 shares of stock and they lent them to you, and then they said, but we're not going to exercise these stocks. They already owned them. I mean, the McConnell Party, it's go to Frankfurt. The freaking headquarters has his name on it in Frankfurt, literally, on the building. I mean, he has all the roles before anybody down at the county level ever got them.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you on that one, but it, you know, I know you're right. But it's interesting, though, because, you know, he's already getting this advanced support. So for anybody who says Mitch McConnell's not worried about Matt Bevin in the primary, clearly you're wrong. He's spending a lot of money attacking Matt Bevin.
Oh, I said that a couple months ago.
And he's pulling Yeah, and he's pulling every string he can to make sure that Matt Bevin doesn't get equal opportunity with party resources. So that's an interesting paradox. But I tell you what gets even more interesting, because regardless of how this primary turns out, they're going to face Allison Lundigan Grimes. Today, you know, Allison Lundigan Grimes, let's go here. Allison Lundigan Grimes has been very, very quiet about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and things like that. She's been very, very quiet. But now, of course, we now all see the disaster that Obamacare is. Now she wants to go out there and go on record saying that they need to fix all this stuff with the insurance companies and live up to the promises. The problem is, in 2009, John Yarmuth went out on a limb at a daggone public hearing here. 1,400 people attend. And he goes out on a limb and said he was willing to stake his political career on voting for a health care overhaul that would help most Americans. Now, at that time, immediately, as soon as all this started going down, the president himself was out there screaming to tell everybody, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. You're not going to see any changes at all. And he's continued even doing that today, even after we now know that that is a proven lie. So now we've got John Yarmuth, who actually verifies that. Speaking with the WHAS reporter, I believe it was Joe Arnold, he's speaking to WHAS, and he says, and I quote, "Those of us who were drafting the law, as I was in 2009, kind of cringe when he said," meaning Obama, "that the first time. We knew that it was not possible to keep your policy. We can't control what insurance companies do." And then he continues going on saying the federal government can't tell an insurance company to sell a certain policy or not. So we knew there were going to be instances into which people could not keep the coverage they had. Now, here's the thing. We just went through this so-called shutdown just a few weeks ago. The largest reason we went into the shutdown was because of the Affordable Care Act, or the Unaffordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Because the Republicans in the House, the biggest thing that they wanted, and they were willing to see it, anything else, was to delay the individual mandate that's creating all of these canceled policies. But the reason these policies are canceling is because the federal government is doing what, Dale?
Go ahead.
They are forcing insurance companies to add coverage that they don't have to add to their policies.
Yep.
And they're forcing them to sell a new policy that has these coverages that the government tells them they have to have. Now, here John Yarmuth is on record saying, federal government can't tell an insurance company to sell a certain policy. We knew that was not possible, but that is exactly what the federal government is doing with Obamacare, and John Yarmuth voted for it. Now, why does this come back to Allison Lundigan Grimes? Because John Yarmuth is obviously a two-faced hypocrite.
Of course.
And if he's willing to stake his political career on it, I hope he's voted out in the next election, because he should be. There's no doubt about that at this point.
The redeeming qualities for John Yarmuth, I said before, is number one, he's so wealthy, and that, you know, being wealthy isn't the redeeming quality, so hear me out. He's so wealthy that he does donate all his salary to charity, but that just tells us that we're electing people who made all the money he did off the restaurants and the medical industries that he has all these interests in. But here's the thing, and again, the other thing that makes him redeeming is sometimes he votes more constitutional than the Republicans in Kentucky, But, Ed, the question is, did you see this ridiculous little waste of an hour show that they did on KET? I don't know if that was last night or Monday night.
It was last night. You're talking about the Nathan Haney and,
Jennifer
Moore and all them. Yeah, go ahead.
Nathan Haney
yet.
And Trey, what's his name? We should be leery of Republicans named Trey by this point. I can't think of what. But
well,
Nathan Haney and the other Republicans sat there, and all they did was kiss McConnell's ass. Never said one thing about the Tea Party, never said a single thing. At one point, Haney even said that, you know that Bevin didn't have a chance in hell and all this. But the bottom line was, then on the other side, you had those people like, I can't remember their names. I try to forget them. Who's the hack who used to be in charge of the Democrat Party that was sitting on the other side of the table?
We're talking about Jennifer Moore.
Yeah, she sat there and talked about how it was so important that we had. She was just sitting there lying through her teeth about Obamacare and said that health care is so important. This isn't about health care. This is about forcing you to buy stuff you don't want. If it's such a good plan, why was it passed in the middle of the night in the middle of the winter. They excluded themselves from it. They excluded their crony friends from it. And they forced it down our throat. And it's such a, a damn good plan why they had to do all that.
Well, and I totally agree. And tomorrow afternoon, I'm pre-taping a show with Rand Paul, with Senator Rand Paul, that will air next week. But, you know, one of the major questions to me when you talk about all of this stuff is, how can anybody still think that this is a legal plan? Once Barack Obama went through and this president decided he was going to delay implementation for any particular section of this health care law at all, he didn't have the right to do that. He violated everything because the law was passed by Congress, signed by the president, and okayed by the Supreme Court, period. So if he wants to alter that law, it must go back through Congress, re-signed by the president, and if somebody wants to challenge it, go back through the Supreme Court. So, you know, there's nothing about it that's constitutional. The individual mandate had to be delayed to be legal. And nobody has mentioned that at all, and nobody will mention that. So I'm going to ask Senator Paul about that tomorrow. But, you know,
that's where Moore was so mistaken on that show Monday night, because I think at one point finally either Haney or Trey, what's his name, one of them,
Garmer.
Sheepishly, what is it?
Trey Garmer, according to a good friend in the chat room, Mr. Paul Holliger. Go ahead.
I think that was the other Democrat, wasn't it? That was the 200-year-old dinosaur sitting next to Moore.
I don't know.
I think maybe it's Trey Watson is what I'm thinking maybe his name is.
Oh, okay.
But
okay,
anyway, my point being, one of those two on the quote-unquote right side, yeah, I believe it's Trey Watson because I believe he's in charge of the Young Republicans in the state now. But one of the two on the quote-unquote right side of the table finally sheepishly called her out on it, about how health care does not equal health insurance. And that's the bottom line. It's this mandate. And she just sat there lying and lying and lying about everything. You know, if it was such a good plan, you wouldn't exclude yourself from it. You wouldn't force it down our throat. You wouldn't do it in the middle of the night. But then once you think about it, they do that with a lot of legislation, exclude themselves, shove it down our throat, and do it in the middle of the night.
Well, they really do, you know. And in John Yarmuth's case, I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. He makes the most of his money because of Medicare and Medicaid and government reimbursements because of his health care and nursing home business. So, you know, for anybody who thinks that he's this altruistic individual giving away his paycheck, that's a crock. He's buying more favors by making sure he gets reimbursed.
I mean,
Medicaid,
I'm glad
Medicaid.
He does it, but that brings back up the argument, Ed, about that time total argument. It's a good debate to have. Do you want people who go to Washington/Frankfurt/City mm-hmm. Hall and make their money while they're there? Or do you want people who go there who have already made their fortunes in some backroom deals and don't need their money? There's always that trade-off because there's the people who grow up and go through those ranks of young Republicans and college Democrats that want to be politicians, and then there's people who sail in and have their own money and don't need that that stipend. So that's why I'm not that fond of.
You give me the poor guy all day long, and I'll take him.
Well,
and I'll take him
guy,
because John Yarmuth already had his money. We both concede that.
Well,
John Yarmuth was loaded when he
gets up there. It's either the middle to upper middle class guy versus the billionaire
right.
who are usually in these elections. And my point being, when you get in there, they're going to make their billions and millions one way or the other. But again, with Yarmuth, like you just said, we pointed out his hypocrisies. He's not got anybody's good intent at heart. But again, he gets on there and he defends his crap, and we know that he's making a ton of money behind the scenes.
Exactly. And he didn't need the money, but he's doing it anyway. So, you know, I think anybody gets in that position is going to screw us the best they can. But we're really concerned to be here is this Lonergan Grimes situation. You know, and I'll be honest with you. I know that you can't stand Mitch McConnell. I'm not Mitch McConnell's biggest fan. We've had those discussions on air. You know, I do have questions about Matt Bevin, but only because Matt Bevin hasn't really done a good job of answering the questions as they're asked to him. You know, but here's what we do know as well. You know, Matt Bevin, for all intents and purposes, is going to lose this race if for no other reason at all he doesn't have any money. The people that are meeting him, the feedback I'm getting from these people is that even though he's very approachable, he's very arrogant. He doesn't want to listen to what you have to say. He wants you to listen to his talking points. That's not.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Outside. See, I have from a bunch of people. And that's the that's a paradox for me because, you know, we've reached out to Matt Bevin, and we're hoping that he gives us a call. I'd love to give him some airtime. I want to help the guy get his airtime like we do everybody else. But that's up to him. I can't do anything about that. So, you know, but the thing is, if these things are true, he's not being – when you're an outsider, for example, and I can only compare myself – as the outsider candidate in 2006. That way I'm not speaking for anybody else. But when I went out and met with people, you know, if they had questions, I answered them. I answered them directly. I answered them honestly. I didn't try to double speak anybody. And they were shocked. They were shocked. Like, we've never had anybody just totally lay it out for us and be honest about it. You know, and as I told them then, that's the problem with politicians. They want to use a double speak. They're scared to commit. They want to tell you what they want you to hear. But if you have a curveball for them, they don't know how to handle that because they haven't been conditioned to have to actually listen to everything you have to say. To some degree, Matt Bevin is falling into that category, according to the large percentage of people that I talk to. So he's not helping himself as the outside candidate. I'm wondering if that's affecting his fundraising, because clearly he's only reported $222,000 in the most recent quarter. He gave himself a $600,000 loan, so that's $822,000 total is all he's had. He's got $165,000 on hand. Hell, Allison Lundgren Grimes got more than that just in Hollywood. And so did Mitch McConnell from California. So,
well, that's what I mean. You know, either got to put up that big money. That money he put up himself, yeah, that's chump change compared to the McConnell war chest. But how many people do you know personally who could put up that kind of money themselves to run a race that people expect him to lose? Most people couldn't afford to do that, so they either put up their own money because they have it. He's been fortunate. Right. He's been very, very smart with businesses. Or you have people who are just flat out bought and sold by the establishment, like Lundgren Grimes. I'm sure she's got enough money now, too, from her daddy and the rest of the Democratic Party that they bankrupted. But, again, she's not having to lend herself hundreds of thousands of dollars like Bevin is, because she just goes to Hollywood and gets it. So it is kind of weird.
See, that brings
me
back.
Yeah, they blast McConnell. You know, I'll say this, and this is not a defense of McConnell, but they blast McConnell for all the money he'll get over there on Wall Street and from the bankers, which we know his top contributors are Citibank, are global banks like that, like Morgan Chase. But then she goes to Hollywood and does the same thing. I think either Watson or Nathan Haney one asked that last night, which is it? Is it big money is bad, or is it big money is good?
Well, I think that's a good question. But the reason I bring that up about Matt is because we often talk and we spend a lot of time talking about the establishment versus the anti-establishment today, Tea Party libertarians, et cetera. You know, if Matt Bevin is being labeled as the Tea Party candidate, okay, and the Tea Party really wants to make this big difference, they've got a great opportunity here. Where's the money from the Tea Party and the libertarians and those people who are saying that they support Matt Bevin? You can't sit here and tell me that Hollywood can give up a couple of million bucks between Grimes and McConnell, and Matt Bevin isn't getting that money for some reason. Why is that?
I can tell you that Hollywood can do it and the Tea Party can't, because I don't consider the Koch brothers or Koch brothers or Koch brothers, whatever they're called, I don't consider them Tea Party. They try to co-opt the Tea Party. So there's not the money in the everyday blue-collar constitution-believing people that there is in these actors and producers and writers. They don't have the money they have.
$5,200
Trust me, a lot of people have been threatened if they, you know, support them financially. These things show up on public records, just like we can look up and see where Nathan Haney, the new county party chair, gave all that money to Trey Grayson and Mitt Romney, and we can see where his heart really lies by looking that up. At the same time, people can look up when they give big money to Bevin, and I guarantee you the McConnell people had talks with him. Remember, we've seen this happen before when we go back to the David Williams and such, where Representative Harmon, who ran for lieutenant governor, remember him with Phil Moffitt?
Yes, I do.
He said he was at a meeting with David Williams and them where they threatened him, where they physically threatened him for being in that race. So trust me, there's a lot of that backbeating and browbeating and blackmailing going on behind the scenes that keep people from putting their money where their mouth is.
Well, I know that firsthand. You know, it's one of the reasons that we have a problem getting advertising dollars here is because I've had business owners tell me that people on the Metro Council and the mayor himself have told them they better not think about advertising with me or they're going to have problems. Restaurants were threatened. You never know when the health department is going to come in and shut you down. That's your veiled threat, folks. The IPL, you know, you might have a zoning problem here that's really going to affect your way of doing business. You know, there's all kinds of ways they use threats. I'm a victim of that. I understand that. You know, but the problem is, I guess, for me personally, if they're going to try to victimize me, and they're going to try to shut me up and think that they have that kind of power over me, I'm going to scream louder. And that's why we do what we do. It's one of the biggest reasons that I find a way to keep this going no matter what, and have been doing it for years, and I'll do it till the day I die. Because they don't have the right in America to tell you you can't be free. So I would think, just me thinking here out loud, I would think that the Tea Partiers are constantly talking about this kind of stuff. The Libertarians are constantly talking about this kind of stuff, that this would be a great opportunity to walk the walk that you'd like to talk. And I don't see that happening. That's what concerns me, is I don't see, if Matt Bevin is the Tea Party candidate, I do not see the Tea Party or the Libertarians rising up against the machine, raging against the machine, if you will, and help him out.
Because well, you alluded to it a couple minutes ago, and I was alluding to it a couple months ago on this show, and that is when your Senate Majority Leader, quote-unquote, I put leader in these air quotes, when your Senate Majority Leader, like Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr., when your
Minority
Senate Majority Leader...
Minority Leader.
Oh, I'm sorry. He wishes Majority Leader. Okay, when you're Senate Minority Leader, excuse me. why do you have to spend some of your war chest to go after somebody who supposedly is irrelevant? It's that age-old battle where the establishment will say, oh, these libertarians, we don't want them in our party, like we saw Shelley May said. And then at the same time, they want you to vote to them, vote for them, like she'll want their votes come May. And which is it? You know, it's just like with the libertarian that ran. We know the libertarian in the governor's race in Virginia was a plant. We know he was an Obama bundler. But when you get a liberty candidate in there, what do they say? Oh, you cost the election. But then when you try to get attention, and we know from Ken Mohman and others, and this is outside the party, not inside the party, they'll do everything they can to keep you from even getting the attention. So with a Matt Bevin, again, if he's not a threat, why would McConnell spend all that money? Number one, because he has the money. And number two, because he does see him as a threat. He saw what happened to his buddy Dick Lugar, who he embraced big time up in Indiana. Mm-hmm.
But do you think that Mitch McConnell really sees Matt Bevin as a threat, or do you see Mitch McConnell seeing the Tea Party label on Matt Bevin as a threat?
I mean, that's a good question. I think he sees the Tea Party as a bigger threat, because I go back to, it was exactly 6 years ago this week that the real modern Tea Party movement started, and that was because Ron Paul had an online campaign where they had a money bomb, they called it. He came up with that term 6 years ago this week. That started the real Tea Party movement, and that's the kind of stuff that McConnell doesn't like. So he probably sees the Tea Party as more of a threat than Bevin.
And, you know, and that seems to be the problem. So that's the thing for me, though. If the Tea Party wants to sit out there and go out on a limb and make all the statements that they make and a Tea Party rule and all this other stuff that they want to do to be a force, and I think we've proven what a force they can be with Tom Massey, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, and a few others. You know, I think we can see the force that a Tea Party can be. Why is it that they're shying away from Matt Bevin? This is a guy that says he's Tea Partier. The media is out there giving the Tea Party recognition by claiming Matt Bevin as a Tea Partier, whether he embraces the title or not. Okay, it's another great opportunity for the Tea Party to go out there and make a difference. So are they scared of losing and thinking that that's going to hurt the Tea Party image? Or,
no.
Or they just don't give a shit about Matt Bevin? Because it can't be both, as we talked about this whole show. You can't have it both ways. Why is it they're not embracing this guy?
I don't think it's either way. I think it's just it's such an uphill battle. I slipped and said Majority Leader, which is what McConnell wants to be. But when was the last time, because I'm honestly asking, I don't know the answer, that either of the sides of the, what we call them, the Uniparty, when's the last time that either side of the Uniparty had to worry about a primary opponent against a Senate minority or majority leader? It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
I agree. I agree.
So,
and I
again,
think they're concerned.
It's a huge uphill battle, and the closest we've ever gotten to that is if you go back to, we'd have to go all the way back to, again, remember, a sitting senator and Senate minority leader who's been in there, my gosh, since 1984. You would literally have to go back to probably Pat Buchanan, who had the balls to run against George Herbert Walker, New World Order Bush in the presidential primary in 92. So that's about the biggest challenge to a Goliath-like incumbent that we've seen in that time.
But see, for me, when you say those statements like that, for me, it just reinforces what I'm already thinking, and that's that the Tea Party, for some reason, is shying away from Bevin, because We know that Mitch McConnell is worried about the Tea Party, or he wouldn't be spending the money that he's spending attacking a primary challenger like Matt Bevin.
Right.
So if he's already worried and he's already concerned, then the Tea Party knows that Bevin is a factor, that Bevin is a factor big time. So why they are not embracing him, you know, and you know, they might not be able to give the $5,200 maximum contribution, but, you know, he can certainly take smaller contributions. And there's a hell of a lot of Tea Partiers out there across the country, you know, or we, at least we continue saying there are, you know, that they could give $100, $50, $25, whatever. Why are these people not uniting? If we can go to California and Hollywood to get money for the Democrats and Mitch McConnell too, why can't they go to California, you know, and everywhere else and get the Tea Partiers to give up $50 or $100 a piece? I think the money's there.
Well, that's just
the
key, getting more of them to do it. I mean, you're right in a way. That's the key, getting more of them to do it, because that's the kind of contributions we saw in Ron Paul's races and Rand Paul's races and Thomas Massey's
right.
races. We saw a lot more people giving smaller amounts. I mean, in the end,
right.
the big Hollywood people and the big Wall Street people who back Grimes and McConnell, they don't get to vote in the primary. But the problem is, people go into the elections and they don't ever know about these other candidates. That's why they have us out here to tell us about stuff that the establishment don't want you to know. The Republican Party does not want you to know that Matt Bevin exists. Let's just tell the truth about it. Just like the gentleman
right.
who was running in the primary against Lundgren and Grimes, the Democratic Party don't want you to know that he exists.
You're absolutely 100% right on that. And that's why the Tea Party should be jumping in and helping him get known. I tell you one thing that never changes, though. You know, this is one of the fastest hours on radio. We are out of time, my friend. Final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts. We see people get scared when they have their power challenged, whether it be Jamie Comer telling people that he won't be controlled by the establishment, whether it be Phil Moffitt running against the establishment, or whether it be Thomas Massie, who had several people beating him up in northern Kentucky. They have been prevailing, and that's the bottom line here. We have the empire on the run. The movement is on the rise. Death to the New World Order.
Well, that's always my cue. I tell you, you know, there are so many things that go on in politics each and every day, and people really don't pay much attention. Thank God they're starting to. You know, it's interesting to me that we had a shutdown October the 1st, a so-called government shutdown kick in. And for 2 weeks, the Republicans were the devil. Every Democrat was standing up screaming, we must have the individual mandate. The Obamacare is good. Republicans bad. And as soon as it went operational October the 1st, you know, by the 17th, the so-called government shutdown was over. And in the last 2 weeks, all we hear is Obamacare is bad. Nothing about the Republicans are shut down. It disappeared. The Democrats are standing up for the same thing. They want to delay the individual mandate. When I look at this and I look at the political dynamics in play here, you see a mainstream media who played poker, and they bluffed and lost. They have no choice but to identify the fallacies of Obamacare and the failure of this government at this time. The Tea Party is out there. You've got people like Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Justin Amash, Tom Massey, and a whole host of others who were chastised for 2 weeks over Obamacare that now are all of a sudden being proven to be right. And then you've got the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, who has all the power, all the money, has every opportunity in the world to get reelected, and he's spending an awful lot of time on a little-known guy named Matt Bevin, who's supposed to be a Tea Party candidate. I, for one, am surprised. I don't know who is running Matt Bevin's campaign. I send an email directly to them, don't get any response. That's okay. But the reality is, somebody's screwing up somewhere, or the Tea Party doesn't have the strength or the backbone, the intestinal fortitude, if you will, to walk the walk, to back up all the talk. Because something's not jiving here. If Matt Bevin has Mitch McConnell so scared, the Tea Partiers should be all over it. And they're not. They are somehow, mysteriously, in the background in the dark. People say I'm crazy because I say Matt Bevin don't have a chance. The only reason I say Matt Bevin don't have a chance is because he can't seem to get over that hump to get the support from the people who should be supporting him most. And if you can't get that kind of support from the people who should be supporting you most, you're not going to get that support from anybody else. And that's the alarming thing here. If you're upset by Mitch McConnell, do something about it. But either way, once this primary is over in May, we've got a very serious discussion to have, and that's one that concerns the socialist in work, the socialist wannabe, Allison Lundigan Grimes. We've got to watch that race next November. That's it for us for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock for his TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. Do not forget our good friend Ken Molman on Sunday night with Liberty Unbridled. As for me, I'll be busy tomorrow speaking with Senator Rand Paul, and I will talk to you guys next week. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. Take care.